report on Donald Trump's tax returns, and David K. Johnston, author of The Making of Donald Trump. That does it for our broadcast. We'll be broadcasting tonight the vice presidential debate. Check democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Joanne Hardesty from Voices from the Edge. This Thursday on Voices from the Edge, I will be interviewing Kathy Janelle Kiesner. She is a Marshallese port and climate justice activist. We'll be discussing issues around climate justice, racism, and activism. Please join me this Thursday at 8 a.m. on Voices from the Edge.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco-certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com. Or by calling 503-230-2300.
It's coming through a hole in the air. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
You know what time it is?
It's KBOO time. It's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show time.
Yeah.
What
okay,
other
well,
time?
That was a little underwhelming.
Okay,
but, yeah.
Sorry. Wasn't up for it. It's time for fun.
Hey. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. I'm Abe Proctor. That person over there is Joe Uris. And we're back.
We're back.
Yes.
And I have a quote to start the show.
Do you? Well, hold on to that for one second.
Okay, sure.
If you'd like to take part in today's conversation, you may do so. 503-231-8187 is the phone number to call. If you'd like to leave a written comment, you can do so on our Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, or on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Let's hear that quote, sir.
Well, this is from Little Abner.
Little Abner.
Yes.
And who might that be?
Well, Little Abner was a cartoon character back in my youth, and he was... put together by a kind of nasty racist guy, but it was a very funny strip. And it's a quote about the attack of the incredible bugs that eat everything in Little Abner World.
The locusts?
No, they're some kind of beetle, I think.
But
I hardly remember.
They eat everything.
They eat everything. Yeah. And the quote is, "Them that dies now is the lucky ones."
Huh.
And on that theme,
really, that's you're going to open the show.
Oh,
with that.
That's my theme.
Those that died now are the lucky ones.
Yeah, because I think we are in a kind of a crisis that most people, whether they are lefties or righties or just ordinaries or indifference, don't realize how really truly scary the situation is right now in this country and in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll pile up the things. Just the environment falling apart. A global ice melt, rising sea waters, great denial by leaders in the world, stuff like that. The Zika virus, just a little taste, four spice, if you will, of what's coming in the world of diseases. The fact that we are making, and the Russians are making, new nuclear weapons when we already have too many that we don't want to have. I don't want to have. So we got all this stuff going on, And meanwhile, there's the neocon, Hillary, versus the fascist clown, Trump, running for president of the United States.
Well, given that KABU is the rational alternative to the fear-mongering mainstream media, I'm really glad you decided to take this tack today.
Well, yes, I thought we'd have a happy time.
Yeah,
This is going to be happy time. I like Jolly Jolly World Will End. It's my kind of thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm getting on and I'm looking around and I'm thinking, man, it didn't, a lot of good things happened, but gee whiz, the police are still murdering black people, only occasionally, be fair, only a few cops, be fair. The fact of the matter is that when we analyze the prison industrial complex, we discover, guess what? Black men are held as slaves, essentially. Mm. Women too. I didn't mean to make it a sexist thing. That we allow this because there is a part of the 13th Amendment which essentially freed the slaves, which says except when you're convicted of a crime, then you can be held in involuntary servitude, and that has been used kind of rationalizing that to create prison industrial complex, where people are paid pennies on the dollar or not at all to do work or not have any rights at all in prison. I mean, prison is a horrible, bad place, which is disproportionately a place of persons of color. All these things, and I'm not picking on any one of them particularly, and I didn't mean to make it an inclusive list. I just am saying, whoa.
So where's this all pointing?
Well, it's all pointing to, am I crazy to be seeing a dark picture of the future?
Really?
And I'm actually challenging him.
Really?
Actually,
this hour of radio time is all about you working your stuff out, Joe?
Yeah, yeah.
Figuring out if you're crazy or not.
It's my psychodynamic.
What a privilege.
And I'm sticking to it.
What a deep privilege,
but also,
for our listeners.
Really. But also, perhaps more relevant, I would love to hear from people who say, well, no, there's a lot of possibilities here. A lot of good things coming down the line.
All right.
Jane Jacobs wrote a book, I can't remember the title of it, but it's like Dark Times Coming, something like that. Mm. Well, I'm in her camp.
Okay.
Okay. You agree with that? No, you don't agree with that.
Well, I hear what you're saying. Yes, I acknowledge that all these things you talked about are a problem. But what I'd like to hear you do is forecast where this pattern stays. Take us through the next, say, 2 or 3 decades, Joe, following these major trend lines through.
Oh, I couldn't do that.
Well, you just set the table.
But
what?
Yeah, but I don't
we're not
know
even
going
to get an appetizer?
I don't know what kind of dishes will be
no
on
entree?
The table.
No entree?
I have no idea whether it'll be lobster or crab, I don't know.
Okay.
Of course, we can't eat the lobsters. They're going to be poisoned.
All right, well, let's follow just one of those threads forward then. Okay.
What thread would you like to follow?
Let's talk about militarization and the enhancement of nuclear arsenals.
Okay.
Where's that going?
Well, it's going to a place where the military-industrial complex has a great investment in building a new military-industrial structure.
And what way would it be new?
Well, what we have now is a Cold War designed pattern. We have the triad, so-called, of nuclear destruction, which Donald Trump, by the way, didn't even know what it was, which is nuclear submarines with missiles that are everywhere, anywhere. You never know where they are. That's the whole idea of that. And they can deliver lethal loads, poisoning the world at any given command of the commander-in-chief, who could be the Donald. Or the Hillary, could be anyone, it could be. And then the other two parts are the hardened missiles, which I don't know if they actually fly, but they're sitting in the Midwest, and there have been some real troubles about the staffing of those. But they probably work, and they probably will hit targets, and they could be used. Well, I wouldn't have thought they'd be used. I think the whole idea of mutually assured destruction and the demonstration of what it would do to the climate, let alone what it does to people, was enough discouragement to make nuclear war unlikely, perhaps impossible. Then the third part of that, of course, is these ancient bombers that we have, and the Russians do too, which are can deliver nuclear missiles or nuclear bombs at the command of their brilliantly fair and just leaderships in each and every country. Not to mention the North Koreans. They got a thing going. I love the North Koreans.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I like the haircut.
Well, how is this pointing to a new military-industrial complex? I don't see what you've described as anything well, but building on top of the superstructure
well,
of the old.
I think it is essentially creating even more monies wasted on mutually assured destruction.
Okay.
And
I still don't think that's a new military-industrial complex.
Oh, I think it is the beginning of a new one. I mean, this is a new generation of brilliant minds at work making weapons.
Yeah, but how is this paradigm fundamentally different from what we saw before?
Well,
we're still talking about mutually assured destruction.
Yeah, we don't really have that kind of surety of the enemy anymore. And the enemy is multiplicitous and all over. And the solution is massive destruction, which doesn't really make sense. Didn't make sense then. Surely doesn't make sense now. And yet, here we go again. And the main reason we go again is because it's such a wealth provider to the military-industrial ruling class.
So, do you foresee a nuclear exchange?
Well,
involving either the United States or Russia in the next couple of decades?
Yes,
you do. You think one or the other are those two nations will drop a bomb on somebody?
Yes. Well, it's really problematic. You know, if we have a crazy president,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a neocon president.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And you'd see that outcome as more likely, say, than an exchange between India and Pakistan?
No.
No.
No. I acknowledge that there's lots of nuclear powers, and any one of them could set it off. But there's too many.
Could be Israel.
Israel is unlikely to use nuclear power because they don't have. They really aren't. Well, they might attack. They might attack Iran or something. You know.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia, which doesn't have nuclear weapons, as far as we know, is pushing a kind of religious fundamentalism, which has come to dominate all over the non-Shia world, the teachings of Islam, pushing Islam, a religion largely of peace and order, pushing it toward a more aggressive position. The two major Western religions that engage in expansion and getting everybody to join them are Christianity and Islam, and this has been a struggle that's gone on since the 1000, let's say, AD.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going on, and that's incredible. And if you look at the history of India/Pakistan, you see the enormous angers and rages and riots and viciousness that accompanied the separation of India into two parts. And I see that as something that is not resolved yet.
Hmm.
And I think, wow. You know, the fact that Pakistan and India both have nuclear weapons, not to say that they're any more less or less stable than we are, is very, 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 very scary. The fact that Israel has nuclear weapons is scary, but I think they're less, as I say, less likely to use them because it doesn't make any kind of strategic sense except as the ultimate doomsday weapon for them to be able to use them.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah,
and
why would a theocratic government ever use a nuke? I don't know.
Yeah, man. Yeah, end time is not a theoretical model in Judaism.
Oh, okay.
No,
well,
no end time thing.
Makes me feel a little better.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Christianity, yes, a lot of fundamentalist end time thinking. Islam, you get to go to heaven by killing yourself in the cause of Islam. Yeah.
Okay. So that's where your nuclear / military industrial complex trend line leads, you believe?
Well, that's just one example.
Another use of nuclear weapons.
Yeah,
it's
just one example.
Oh, okay.
But part of this is based on my continuing belief that people are absolutely a species not too smart and not smart enough.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean we have technologies that are marvelous. Mm-hmm. We have technologies largely of destruction, but we also have the potential to deal with problems, but we don't do it. We now have in the United States a governmental system that's frozen between the stupid and the stupider.
Hmm.
And it doesn't look to me like there's going to be any kind of resolution in the foreseeable future. The way the Constitution structured states was a compromise of a bad compromise that for the time being, that is back in those times, pre-1800, made perfect sense, but now really doesn't. you know, we really shouldn't have a system where elections are not decided by a popular vote of the people, but by an electoral college, which is an arbitrary structure that separates, was designed to separate the people from the direct rule.
Okay, so the idiosyncrasies of our governmental system aside, why are human beings both too smart and not smart enough?
Well, I don't know the genetic answer to that. But
no, well, tell me what led you to make that statement.
Well, I'm seeing it. We should long ago have eschewed a lot of the technologies of war, and we haven't done it.
Hmm.
And we should long ago have recognized the need to work on climate problems, and we haven't done it.
Well, I think we have acknowledged the need. We just haven't done it.
Yeah, we had this big meeting in Paris. It was cool.
Okay.
And 10 years from now, maybe some things will be done. But, you know, it's not enough and it's not soon enough.
Okay. Let's take a phone call and then we'll talk about climate change. That's the second.
You like
the second major thread that you've laid out for
today. Well, that's the second major thread. Yes.
Okay. Who do we have, Kathleen? Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Abe and Joe.
Hello.
So I'm not normally.
Wait, you're here to cheer us up, right?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, I don't know that I'm known in my circles as the one to bring hope to the conversation. But the first thing that I actually came to my mind is hip hop culture, and the reason that I bring that up is because when I think of the total destruction and chaos and violence that we experience on this planet right now, it can seem pretty overwhelming. But if we actually look at the social, political, and economic conditions of the South Bronx in the 60s and 70s, which actually produced hip-hop culture, we have reason for hope.
Well, that's an interesting point. You're saying cultural creativity could be a way of helping this situation.
Yeah, you know, and it's like the phoenix from the flames, right? The ash is the fertile ground for new growth, you know.
Okay.
And if you look at the phenomena that we now call hip hop and how they emerge from the total neglect and chaos and self-destruction that was the South Bronx in the 70s, right, where you had like 7,000 tenement fires in 1 year in 1977.
Yeah, it was landlord fires, as we called them.
Exactly. And so, you know, just a total bombed out city. But out of that, you had the creativity and ingenuity of the young people who had nothing, and yet they still managed to find a way to create this incredible expression that now resonates all over the planet.
Is this like the plot of the musical Rent?
No.
No. This is different.
Okay.
So this is intriguing. It's almost like you're suggesting that perhaps this period of uncertainty and indeed of existential crisis is sort of a necessary growth period in the broader evolution of humanity.
Yeah, I'm sure hoping, you know, because there is a very real potential that we're just going to snuff out all the conditions that are viable for most forms of life on this planet, and that'll be the end of the story. But the other possibility is that under this enormous stress, pressure, and chaos, that we're going to find, or at least rediscover, perhaps ways of being that are much more in tune with our connections to one another as social creatures, and a realization of our need to be intimately connected with the earth, which gives us everything that we need in order to survive.
Well, and it's so, always possible till the skinny man sings.
Yes. So hip hop, you know, the phoenix, those two kind of metaphors give me hope. And then when I don't have that, still fall back on Chris Hedges, you know, and the moral imperative that we have to do the right thing, even if we think we might lose.
Right.
That we still have to continue to push and fight with every breath that we have to try to make this world a better place.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and I certainly share Chris Hedges, actually Christian-based in his case, demand that...
Well, Unitarian Universalist-based.
If you will. Is that Christianity? I don't know. That's you know,
not really.
I created a church called the Ineffable Vagueness, where you think there might be something there, but you don't know what it is.
Yeah, I'm with that. Where do I sign up?
So more broadly speaking, it sounds like you're suggesting that because of the incredibly self-destructive aspects of dominant culture, and by dominant culture I mean the legacy of European colonialism, that all around the world we're going to need to look to alternatives from the non-majority culture, like hip-hop culture, to point the way towards a more rational, more enlightened sort of future.
Well, I agree with you both, really, but I have to say, Abe, you're talking about something that is as if it were something of old Europe. But we, the United States, are an imperial power.
Yes.
We gained control. Control of a third of Mexico. We killed the native peoples. We are the problem here.
Well, yeah, I would say that's part of the legacy of European colonialism.
Oh, okay.
That's totally. What I would say.
Oh,
and,
I'll
and
agree
actually,
with you.
I'm coming to see that really this fundamental problem is much deeper than even the West, that I think it goes back to possibly even the very foundations of civilization and the way that we've set ourselves up in terms of that kind of organization of people mm-hmm. and the concentration of resources into cities. And I wonder, you know, if really the fundamental antithesis of that is really the many varied manifestations of truly indigenous culture, where people over many thousands of years learn to live in a place and without exhausting the resources in that place, and therefore didn't need to go out and conquer because they had what they needed. And I think the fundamental contradiction that we see is the erasure of indigenous ways of being, indigenous knowledge, indigenous wisdom, because we have all of this technology that we think is gonna be the thing that fixes everything else, to make it bigger and better and more powerful.
Well,
and
I think you've essentially made the case theoretically, philosophically, for the survival and the evolution of humankind. And I think I'm going to let you go and see how people respond to my dark picture versus your much happier picture.
Before you go, Chris, we should just remind everyone, that it's tricky to rock a rhyme that's right on time. It's tricky.
It's true. Quite tricky, but it sounds like you got it down there.
But remember, Kim Kardashian just got $9 million worth of jewelry ripped off. That's major importance.
Yeah, that doesn't readjust the cosmic scales, I'm afraid.
All right,
hey, man,
day.
Thanks for the call.
All right.
I couldn't resist the Kim Kardashian thing. It's so bizarre.
That was an excellent call.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's a good man.
Yeah, his vision is somewhat at odds with yours.
Well,
he seems to embrace the fundamental tendency of human beings to seek something better.
I'm not saying he's wrong. I just think he's wrong. I have a very dark vision today.
Okay, so we've followed the military-industrial thread to the use of nuclear weapons, which is... That's just brightening my morning. So let's talk about climate change, Joe.
Sure, better, more jolly than nuclear destruction.
Where does the trend line lead?
Slowly too slowly to not kind of dealing with it until it's...
Where? Where's it going? What's it going to happen?
Well, it's going to flood out many smaller island nations right off the bat. It's going to create a possibility, if people can get it together, of building giant dikes in the Dutch model, I guess, for all the cities of the coasts of the world. Which is, you know, it's a good working project.
Hmm. I have a feeling perhaps that rich cities might see their dikes built a little faster than poorer cities will.
Well, I think that's probably true. I think that in the fact that that resources are so unfairly distributed is another example of the problems we're talking about. And I see, the U.S. as even without the clown prince becoming president, the fascist king, I see that we haven't done the things that even Europe has done post-war. We haven't built a high-speed rail system. We haven't really dealt with climate issues at any level. We are a continent, really, impervious to the realities of the physical limitations of our environment, and we are not willing to really create a modern post-industrial climate.
The data suggests otherwise. There's a strong majority of Americans who believe that climate change is caused by human activity, poses an imminent threat to ecosystems and to the health of peoples in low-lying regions around the world, and believe that drastic steps need to be taken to address it.
Well, that's nice, except that the Congress of the United States doesn't believe that, and that's allegedly the representative of the people.
Uh-huh.
And
but you just said
we're running an election campaign where essentially what I argue a neocon, a rational neocon, is running against a crazy fascist.
You just said though that we're a continent seemingly oblivious to the implications.
I shouldn't have said
consequences.
I shouldn't have said oblivious. I should have said incapable.
Incapable.
Yeah, let's change the language.
Okay, so you think that's a done deal? The United States, the government of the United States, as it is currently constituted, will not be able to marshal a solution.
Well, it's difficult to predict the future, but I don't see any signs.
You don't see any signs?
I don't see any signs.
What about the halting of the Keystone Pipeline?
The Keystone Pipeline, I thought, well, that's great. And then I look at what's happening at Standing Rock and realize, oh, that's just a replacement pipe.
Is it, though?
It is. It goes through significant water resources.
Yeah,
creates a lot of danger and absolutely ignores the rights and interests of indigenous people.
It wasn't
people.
Designed to carry tar sands oil from Alberta to the Gulf of Mexico, not the way the Keystone
No, but it is designed to carry tar sands. Well, actually, it is designed to carry tar sands oil.
Not all the way from Alberta. It's there to
no.
to Bakken oil in North
From Bakken, which is, right. The same old kind of oil.
Or very similar.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to get at here is that both of those projects have stopped because of resistance from ordinary North Americans in Canada and in the United States, both indigenous and the descendants of colonists.
That would be nice. I don't think it's happening.
Stopped. It is happening.
No, it is not happening.
Have either of those projects gone forward?
The pipeline going through the Mississippi, under the Missouri River, is going forward.
Yeah, I'm not.
It's not been stopped.
I'm not trying to contradict your statement that there is a significant inertia here because of the way wealth is concentrated.
You just want to be happy.
I do. I do. Just want to be happy. Yes, I admit it, and I feel no guilt over that. I want to be happy. I want everyone to be happy. I want the conditions. To persevere, that enable people to seek happiness.
Well, and part of that is should we all join hands and sing a pretty song? Or
that
what?
Might be part of that. Always makes me happy. I don't know about you, but working.
It always
to,
reminds me of summer camp.
Okay, working to address climate change is part of, I believe, preserving the conditions that will allow the most people to pursue happiness.
Well, obviously, I will completely agree with you because until it's over, it's not over.
No. Okay.
if you catch my drift here.
Yeah, I do catch your drift. But you seem to be, you are a pessimist and a cynic, I think, by nature. Are we safe
no,
to
it's
say
not by
that?
Nature. It's by experience. Nature?
By experience?
Yeah.
The world has ground you down?
No, the
to
world
the
has not.
Cynic you are today?
I am not grounded down. I am fine. I am not. I simply observe how stupid... How elementarily stupid the ruling classes of the world are.
Okay, I'm
not
with you
to
on
mention
that,
the general stupidity of the general population.
All right.
Another kind of stupid.
The data suggest that our best efforts aside, most of those efforts happening elsewhere than the United States,
yes.
That the warming of the climate may have gone far enough such that we won't be able to stave off some of the more disastrous effects, like rising sea levels that you talked about.
Yeah.
That we're going to have to prepare ourselves for an extended period of more or less one catastrophe after another.
Yeah, and the mosquitoes are coming.
This
ta-da,
is true.
Ta-da.
And the evidence suggests that we have already entered this period of one catastrophe after another.
Yeah.
So the question then becomes, how do we mitigate the danger? How do we make this as soft a landing as possible?
Well, let me be clear. It is possible that human beings could get together and, using our brilliance and all of our resources, change the scenario. It is possible.
It is possible.
And I cannot deny that possibility. I just don't see it happening.
Okay.
Which I can leave it at that.
Yeah, I think you can.
And then we can have hope.
Right.
But we can also, and this is important, existentially continue, and I believe this and believe it's important, struggle to make things, to mitigate, to make things more healthy, more better, as it were. We can, for example, try to create more national monuments, try to create more lands that are kept in their natural state in the United States, for example, in Mexico, in Canada. We can begin to recognize really amongst ourselves as a people the need for wildlands, the need for a world not based on human short-term interests. We can do that. But will we?
Yes, that is the question.
Yeah.
Now, we've got some callers, but before I go to the callers, I want to explore one more thread here. Now, we talked about in the foreseeable future, I'm talking a few decades out, we're going to be looking at some pretty severe consequences of global climate change.
Well, that's clear. That's clear.
Probably the most significant of which, as we've discussed, are rising sea levels, which will literally displace tens of millions of human beings from low-lying coastal regions. Right?
And then there's the mosquitoes. I like the mosquitoes.
But we'll save that for our next major thread here.
Okay.
So we're talking about in places like the Ganges Valley in India and Bangladesh, in the Orinoco River, the Amazon, the Mississippi Valley, the lower regions of the Mississippi
Valley. The Hudson.
Lots of places like this are going to see the creation of literally tens of millions of climate refugees.
Yes.
This is going to be a huge problem. And if you're looking at the possibility of a future nuclear exchange, I would suggest that, you know, rather than a resumption of the old great game between Russia and the West, I think it might be the pressures exerted by the mass migration of tens of millions of people whose homes have been swallowed by the sea that may lead to the eventual nuclear conflict.
Well, I certainly won't argue which scenario will lead to disaster, because you're accepting my premise that disaster is coming.
Oh, yeah. I think that the next 100-150 years is going to be a severe test for humanity as we have known it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So long, folks.
Yep. Well, let's go to the phones. Oh,
it's too dark.
Look, somebody already checked out.
No, it's too dark.
Who's next? Sean, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So cheer us up, Sean.
Huh?
Cheer us up.
Well, I'm just going to start by saying you're both right in terms of, you know, Joe and your cynicism, you're absolutely right.
I'm not being cynical. I'm being observant.
Abe, on the other side, your hopefulness, you're absolutely right, because I think that's kind of a mixture of you know, it's never one thing or another. But it ties into, I'm not going to take much time. I just wanted to recommend a fantastic book that sure made me look at our species in a different way. And if nobody's read it, I highly recommend it. And I think it does play into not just these issues, every issue that humans struggle over. And the book is simply titled Sapiens. Have you guys ever heard of that?
Say that again. Safety?
Sapiens.
Sapiens as in humans.
Oh, sapiens.
As in Homo sapiens.
Monkeys.
Yep. Yep.
Yes. Okay. And it's written by Yuval Noah Harari. Okay. And it's a fantastic book. And one of the premises is that, you know, sapiens, we became the primary human species out of originally six. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's
and
true, as far as I know.
Who we are, and it's that a lot of it is based off of the fictions that a lot, to get to where we are today, was primarily based off of the fictions that we tell ourselves in order to get through life.
Well, sure.
I don't think, okay, you say that, but I would say the majority of people don't stop and really think about that's how they act in the world. And also, one of the things is that also he points out is that if you look at our institutions and pretty much every kind of so-called institution, how we look at things and run things are based off of those fictions. And it's based off of not truly wanting to look at the reality of the life around us.
Well, where are you going to cheer me up here?
Hooks into...
Yeah.
And I'm not saying bad things, but like with Abe and believing and wanting to be hopeful, I do think that's a part of a kind of a natural instinct of humans wanting to believe that. But it's based off of not really wanting to deal more with the reality
No, I disagree. I disagree. I think hope is a precondition for actually getting ourselves out of this mess. Okay, if we don't believe we can do it, we won't be able to do it.
Well, and I can't argue with that. But I have to say, Abe is a closet Christian, so you can't trust him.
Okay, so the fact is, I agree with that as well. But, they've also shown the studies that in wanting to remain hopeful, and I'm not making judgments one way or another. It's just, his book is really a brain opener in terms of how we go about so-called living our lives and how we approach things.
Well, I'll read this book.
But it's just that they've also done the studies about how in the remaining hopeful, and I see, because I don't like the whole concept about when we talk about people who are cynical, there tends to be a negative stigmatism that comes with that. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of people who are so-called cynical are also based in wanting to understand and coming from reality, mm-hmm. and what can we do about it.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
In the hopeful part of it is that that's fine, but a lot of it is that in staying in a hopeful place, you're wanting to solve something in the short term that doesn't really take in the long-term consequences.
I'm finding myself.
And that is what a lot of also what he writes in this book as well.
Well, I will read the book, and I do appreciate it. Sapiens. And I also want to just make some things clear here about why I get bitter and sad. Not why I get bitter and sad for my personal world, which is, very real, children, grandchildren, et cetera. But most Americans are poorly educated. Most people in the world are even more poorly educated. People believe stuff that is patently untrue. We are, what I grew up with in school, what I was told was a bunch of lies, a lot of lies, and it's still, the lies still keep flowing. And until we begin to look at our history as a real set of events having to do with real power relations, having to do with trying to solve problems in short-term ways, which led to longer-term problems, including the Civil War, and the unresolved issues that the Civil War left us with. As we look at it, is not amenable to change when you have a society where people are really ignorant. And that's not the fault of the people, but it definitely is the fault of the structure of the system, which leaves people, even if they learn to read and write, in a place that is dark and dismal and absolutely only dependent for light upon magical thinking. That's what I think.
Well, and I would say that's true, and it's based a lot of, like, the political systems. And just simply, and I won't go into it, but just, like, this whole thing now with the discovery of Donald Trump and, his taxes and everything and so forth. But overall, of, like, previous in Democracy Now, of talking about he's a great salesman and he can sell you, it's a great analogy to the overall system, is he can take something that's basically worthless and make you believe that there's total treasure there.
He's good at that.
Political system and candidates are able to do, and people will buy into that content instead of the actual reality of what they say and how it's turned out in creating their life. And I agree with Joe, is that things have gotten seriously bad in this country, because people over and over have continued to swallow these myths and these lies and believe it as though it's a truth, instead of actually picking up the ball and doing something more with the actual truth of
I agree with you. I'm gonna.
Anyway, so thanks for the time, you guys.
You bet. Thank you for the call.
Well, it's a good call, and he makes good arguments, and I don't buy it.
All right, who's next?
Who's next?
Who do we have here?
Well, you might ask.
Juan, good morning. What's on your mind?
Are you there?
Hello. Hello? Hey, how you doing?
Good. I missed the title of the book that he...
Sapiens.
Sapiens.
Okay, like...
people. Like monkeys.
Yes.
Sapiens.
All right. Have you ever seen the T-shirt where you have the lowest ape, and then they're getting bigger and bigger, and then there's Neanderthal, and then at the end, Cro-Magnon?
Yeah.
Have you, and they're walking forward.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the version where the guy at the end says, go back, they effed it up?
No, I haven't.
No, but it sounds like a good T-shirt.
So let me ask you sort of a basic question. Do we have to have the revolution before we can act on the things we need to act
on?
Well,
what do you mean by revolution? Do you mean like violent, you know, swords and guns and stuff?
Well, I don't want to mean by that, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, if we all know the DNC can get behind a candidate and rig the outcome.
Yeah.
So that the person who was probably going to really trash her and would be trashing Trump right now, I don't think it would even be close if it was Bernie versus Trump.
I agree with that statement.
All you got to do is, have you seen any of the photos of like her rallies and stuff now?
Well, wait a minute. Are you going to turn this into a Hillary bashing? Because, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do?
Okay, Joe. But I mean, what do we do when the legitimate means is taken away from us and we're left with what?
Well, I'm arguing that the legitimate means, whatever the heck that means, has long ago, in fact, never been there. We never have had small d democracy. We never have had representative government. We have had a system that was designed to accommodate the needs of a ruling class of 1780s.
Okay, so but you know what? We've made advances. We made it so that we got to elect senators. Even if they didn't do what we wanted them
to
do.
It is certainly true that there have been many improvements.
We made advances as far as labor was concerned. Come on, we have a weekend and the kids aren't working quite.
Right. Instead, we have slave labor in Vietnam and in China and in Mexico and so on.
All right. Well, you can't ask the Americans to solve the entire world's problems, right?
Well, that would be...
That's
a good argument, except for one thing, which is that what has been created largely by the Western powers is an economic knitted together system where the exploitation is less obvious for ordinary people in this part of the world because the exploitation takes place in a place we don't have to know
about. Let me repose my question, then I'll get lost.
Don't get lost, man.
If you're saying we never had it, and you're telling me you can't use force to get it, you're just telling me to suck it.
Well, I see. First of all, I think your argument is brilliant in another way, which is what use is my argument, which I think is what you're saying, and I appreciate that. On the other hand. And here's where I have hope. We never know. I like to use, I probably used it on the air before, a movie that I saw when I was a kid, which was actually about Cuban Revolution. And in this movie, I think I've talked about this, but it's worth talking about again. In this fiction, a group of revolutionaries dig a tunnel through a graveyard to a place, a plaza, where they're going to blow up the leadership, the dictatorship in Cuba. But as they plan to do this to get it all done, it's a horrible story of working their way through graveyards, etc. As they complete this, with a nice love story put in, as they complete this, they discover in the papers that, in fact, the event that they've been preparing for with this has been moved to another location, and they're in despair. Meanwhile, and this is the relevant point, a whole bunch of other people have created a real national revolutionary movement that overthrows the actual dictatorship. Totally different bunch of people than the people doing this work. Now, that point being, hey, you never know what's going to happen that could make things better. The irony of the film is that the regime that is praised is the Batista regime, which, of course, was thought to be a democratic regime until it became obviously not so and was overthrown by Castro. I mean, it's a great movie. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, you don't know the name?
Well, I didn't look it up. What do you want? You have to go to Cuban, well, American, yeah, Cuban movie.
When you cite a film, it would be nice to you know, to know the title.
Well, you could do it right there with your little computer.
Yeah, I could, but I won't.
Okay.
Hey, well, thank you for the call, sir.
Take care.
Yeah. No, I think this is a. I think the responses are good.
Yep. Corey writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to say, as far as climate change goes, it's a myth. Pickup trucks customized to spew black smoke into the air are quickly becoming the newest weapon in the culture wars. Coal rollers are diesel trucks modified with chimneys and equipment that can force extra fuel into the engine, causing dark black smoke to pour out of the chimney stacks. So take that, Obama.
Well, that's actually happening here.
Yeah, I know. He closes with, we're doomed. You know, and that's a valid point. Now, here's something I don't understand. This is a little bit of a tangent to what we're talking about. And if we have conservative listeners, I'd like to hear what they think or what their answer to this question might be. Why, in the extended realm of the culture wars in the United States, when we have an obvious problem like climate change?
Not obvious.
Obvious. At this point, obvious. If you're not aware of it, you've had your head under a rock, or you've been, you know, giving moon eyes to Sarah Palin 24/7. Yeah, obvious. Okay.
I don't know what moon eyes are, but go ahead.
So thank you.
Okay.
Why then, in the face of this obvious problem, even if you happen to disagree, why then would you take a diesel pickup truck and modify it so that it puts out even more crap into the air? Where is the logic in that?
The answer is a song called Macho Man.
That's the answer.
Yeah.
A 70s disco classic.
Testosterone poisoning.
Oh, okay. That probably is pretty close to the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But if any conservative listeners happen to be tuning in and they want to weigh in on this question, I'd be interested to hear what they think.
Well, let me just say a quick thing. I go to the Saturday market quite often.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, vegetables are fresher but more expensive. Same with fruit. Nice vendors. A whole scene, because I'm so cynical, I think of as kind of funny in a silly way. But on the other hand, I go and I like the interaction and so on. I like the people who are there. There's a guy there who sells lamb. He produces really good young lamb.
Uh-huh.
And I buy from him fairly regularly because I eat lamb.
Okay.
Now he and I have a friendly but kind of bitter exchange. He's a Trumper. Mm-hmm. Seriously, a Trumper.
Lamb guy's a Trumper.
All right. And he says, you know, he calls Hillary, what's their expression? Lying Hillary.
Crooked Hillary.
Crooked Hillary. Yep. Crooked Hillary, right. And, you know, that's his line. With recent revelations about Trump, I ran into him and said, well, you're still supporting Trump. And he is. He doesn't care. He does not care what evidence anyone could produce because he's a true believer, and what he believes in is a model that is fictive totally. It's just a fiction, and he really believes in it. And what's really weird is that millions of other people do as well.
So it's to surrender to factual reality would be to what? Give up some essential part of himself?
I think so.
That's really weird.
I think that's what's happening.
Someone really pulled the wool over Lamb Guy's eyes.
Well, yeah, and you know, his scene is really great. His partner sits there and she uses a spinning wheel and produces yarn, and then she makes sweaters and stuff, and it's a cool scene, and they produce these lambs, and it's all lovely. Except ideologically, it's terrifying.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I'm just raising this as an example of the bizarreness of our time.
Okay.
That's all.
All right. So, coming back now to the third major threat in your trifecta of doom.
Doom!
Infectious diseases.
I love that
one. Spread of new infectious diseases.
Yes.
All right. Where is that pointing, Joe, and why?
Well,
and which diseases
global warming,
are you talking about?
It also relates to global warming. Global warming makes it possible for organisms that are mostly in the history of the world restricted to warmer places to be going north.
Hmm.
And we're going to be seeing a lot more of that as their global warming continues. Also, it is obvious that we have a Congress that doesn't get it and won't move quickly on it. And the answer to the mosquitoes, unfortunately, is poisons that poison the environment. So it's a ball of horror.
Hmm.
That's the example of that.
And you don't think advances in epidemiology are enough to contain the vectors spreading these diseases?
Well,
are you foreseeing widespread mass casualties on the scale of those associated with climate change?
Yeah.
You are.
I am. I'm not saying it's inevitable. I don't believe it's inevitable. But I am saying that the resources being put to the solving of these problems are totally inadequate at this point.
Are there any diseases in particular you're worried about?
Well, I like bug-borne diseases.
You don't, those are your bag.
Huh? They're my favorites. Uh-huh. I like dengue fever because it's both
malaria.
Pain. Dengue fever is really wonderful. Uh-huh. It creates fever. It creates pain. It's horrible, and then you die. There are others. Malaria, which sticks around forever once you've got it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to make a list of terrible diseases. Yellow fever may return. Oh, okay. But, you know.
But you think this is going to be a significant part of the equation going forward?
Well, it may ironically be a good thing because it'll knock out a bunch of people.
Oh, boy. I'm going to leave that one right on the table in a big steaming
heap.
I figured you would.
Okay. I figured you would.
Let's go to the phones. Francis, good morning. Save us, Francis, please.
I believe in magic, Joe. I also believe in the power of the human spirit. And just as when, for example, in Syria, in the hell that people are experiencing right now, and the bombing and the killing, there was a scene that we rarely see, and we hardly see any news about anything going on over there, actually. But a rescue worker rescued a tiny, tiny baby from the bottom of all this rubble, and the baby was alive, and he was crying. And in that moment, it was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But anyway, what I wanted to talk to you about was the new documentary that's coming out. It was the first time ever in the New York Film Festival that a documentary opened up the festival, and it is called 13th. And it was... It's done by the woman who directed Selma.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called 13th, and it's about the 13th Amendment. It's about that clause that you were speaking about earlier, Joe, where you are, slavery is prohibited unless you're a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes through the history of the mass incarceration. It starts from that law and goes through the history to where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I saw a trailer of it, and it's quite amazing. And what is most wonderful about it is that the truth is being told. And there are people among us, unfortunately not among the two candidates that we seem to think are the only choices in our lives, who are advocating for Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which would actually have to deal directly with all the truths that we have hidden under the rug for so many years. But what I wanted to say was we need to then look at the 14th Amendment, because the 14th Amendment was intended to address just that problem.
That's right.
Okay, and it was to provide equal protection under the law.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been used to provide equal protection to corporations.
That's right.
Rather than the people who they were intended to protect.
Well, I don't know about but certainly its emphasis has been corporate.
It has never been used to protect the people who are now in prison, massly incarcerated.
That's true.
It has never been used in the way it was intended. But it has been used to protect the corporate interests who continue the oppression.
Well, yeah, and remember that the recent Supreme Court essentially turned corporations into people.
Exactly. But that just needs to be revisited, and I don't know how we're going to do it, but it can be done. And Truth and Reconciliation Commissions are beginning. All these issues that you are speaking of today, your concerns, are issues that are being addressed, but they're not being addressed by the two major parties. So I don't know how we're going to get around the idea and the notion that those are the only choices we ever have in our lives. And I think if we keep working on it, because I talk to people who are very committed, and a lot of young, what do they call them, millennials now, who are very aware, very wise, very astute. And they know what's going on. They see what's going on. They see how corporate media is being used to twist and turn truths to where they're not even factual anymore. And they see how these major news networks, all they talk about all day long is these two people stabbing at each other and never really discussing any issues. And the corporate media, just yesterday morning, I heard one of them say, yeah, we may be at fault with that. We probably have just gone after the glitz and the show and the circus and not the real issues. Okay. So the truth is still there, Joe. We just got to figure out how to.
Yeah, I want to be clear about something. I opened with this very harsh assessment of the situation. I am not sure that I'm right, first of all. Second of all, it is always possible, which was my point about this old movie. It is always possible that things are changing and simply not, I'm missing it, or we all are missing it, or we don't realize what chances, what good opportunities there are, and what great forces are at work. I am not the wise man who knows all of that. I'm just saying, a lot of it having to do with Jane Jacobs, I'm just saying dark times really lie ahead unless incredible efforts by a lot of people of goodwill take place, and that those people have to have some kind of shared set of values and goals. And I'm not seeing it.
Okay, well, this is what you need to know. There are people in this world, in this life, who have experienced the darkest of times already, and who have risen and who are alive and who still find joy. So,
I think you're probably right. Abe thinks you're absolutely right. I think you're probably right.
I am right. I've met them.
Okay.
I know people who have lived years in solitary confinement in the middle of some penitentiary who are now on the streets being good people. You know,
I believe
they,
you.
They overcame some very, very dark times that we have no idea how that feels. You and I have never experienced some things that people have already experienced and who still came out the other way on the other side with hope and love and joy.
I think that's a really, by the way, I want to confirm that what you're saying is true and is a very important point. Again,
so we need to hold on to that.
Yeah, but, you know.
Take from them. You know, listen to hip-hop.
No, I like hip-hop.
Yeah, listen to the words, though.
Okay.
Listen to the words of the underground hip-hop.
Yeah, no, I cannot argue with that advice.
Hope
Francis
is living all among us. All right.
Francis, thank you, as always, for the phone call.
Take care.
All right. We're getting near the end here.
Well, yeah, and I'm still in the dark place.
Why don't you sum up for us, Joe, where you're at?
No, I'm not going to sum up.
You're not going to sum up?
Well, I just, let me say, it is always possible that things can change rapidly or even slowly in such a way that the world heals itself, that the people of the world heal the world. This is a tradition within every religion. It is a tradition within science. All of that is possible. The problem that I see is that we have created, particularly in this culture, which is the one I'm most familiar with, a situation that binds us to loyalties that are absolutely inconsistent with the survival of the planet. And that's where I'm going with all this.
So what do we do about it?
Well, I think...
How do you convince someone whose loyalties are inconsistent with the survival of the planet that perhaps their loyalties ought to shift? How do you do that?
I don't know.
Do you just wait for them to grow old and die?
Well, you know, what I've done in my life is very minuscule. I was very, very, very politically active in my younger years, less so nowadays. And also, I have been, a college professor, and I have taught all kinds of theoretical and historical stuff, and I don't know whether I influenced any of those students or if they were even awake during that process. I do know, and here's another dark thing, that the universities and community colleges probably are turning away from interaction between human beings in a classroom and turning toward very fast money-making processes where you take a course online, which does not in any way impact you personally. That's another example of something that truly troubles me. On the other hand, as somebody said, the truth is out there. I believe it was a science fiction somebody.
It was.
Okay.
It was Mulder and Scully.
Oh yeah, who could forget Mulder and Scully?
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's try and squeeze in one more phone call if we can. Steve? Gina, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Got to make it fast.
Okay, I just wanted to paint a little picture for you to that might help you in your doom and gloom scenario.
Great.
Just a vision of neighborhoods coming together to work together in order to, break down fences, grow vegetables in their own backyard. If we have a Trump presidency, we may be on our own. And they're already threatening to close down the government. And I believe that the people of this earth, really will put in the work and the responsibility to take care of things and each other. That's just my optimistic view, but it kind of does include a very compassionate reality that we might not have a government to do this stuff for us. And that's okay with me. I don't know about you, but I'm okay.
Okay, no, that's great. It's a nice call to close on. There are possibilities. My darkness is not the greatest wisdom. It's simply one thought in a great deal of thinking.
Hey, thank you for the call. And thanks, everybody, for taking part in the conversation today. We had a listener write in, Joe. They think that perhaps the movie you referenced about the Cuban revolutionaries was called We Were Strangers.
I think it is.
We Were Strangers, 1949.
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Well, thanks to everybody who took part today. We'll be back at you next week. Take care.
Yeah.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 9 o'clock. Coming up this morning on The Boo at 11:30, it's Art Focus with our host Andre Middleton. At 11 o'clock on Stage and Studio, James Dixon is our host. At 10:15, we have Flashpoints with our host Dennis Bernstein. And before that, it's Chris Andre with Air Cascadia. But coming up next, right now, is Alternative Radio, where noted intellectual Noam Chomsky speaks on elections and voting.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Social Justice Action Center Open House, Tuesday, October 4th, beginning at 5:30 p.m. at 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. Rents in Portland are rising, and long-term grassroots institutions are being forced out. But the Social Justice Action Center is bucking that trend. The Social Justice Action Center will be sharing their model for grassroots organizing in the heart of Portland, especially by and for marginalized communities and organizers of color. There will also be information on getting involved with the center, a silent auction, music, and much more. Again, that's the Social Justice Action Center Open House, Tuesday, October 4th, starting at 5:30 p.m. at 400.